Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, over the last month plus, we've discussed the 50th through 11th best, in your opinion, sports announcer calls of the last 35 years. Today, we are here to talk the top 10.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, if you didn't like this, you're excited because it's over, but I'm excited to get to the good stuff. Best call since 1983, so there won't be a Miracle on Ice today. There won't be. I think that was a good wrinkle that I threw in, that it was post. I was like, how can we not have Miracle on Ice win when it's clearly the best? And then when I thought, like, oh, we just go post-1980, and then I realized, like, all right, let's just do 83, because that's when we were born.
Our lifetimes. It works perfectly.
It works perfectly. Yeah. And then, like, there's really nothing. I'd like to hear, after we're done, if there's something really egregious we've missed. I haven't heard anything yet that's, like, anything is, like, I cannot believe that's not on there. It's like, oh, because that's in the top 10. I'd like to hear what, you know, listeners to maybe give us a, hear the also receiving votes, like the 10 that should have been there.
Yeah. I mean, I think for sure if you're including the local radio calls, there's going to be a ton.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not super interested in that.
I mean, I'm just thinking of my teams. Like, the Vikings' painful losses have led to so many great meltdowns by Paul Allen on the local Vikings radio. I don't think we're going to have any of those in the top 10, which means we didn't have any of them in the top 50. It's interesting to, and in fact, we haven't really had any calls of the losing team, like, at all.
That's a good call.
We've either had the national call or we've had the
Yeah, but
the,
we went mostly national over local to begin with, but that's a good call.
Yeah. All right, so why don't we jump right in, because we have some legendary calls here. Start with number 10.
All right, so number 10. What can I actually, you were talking about the losing team and the Vikings before. Can I tell you, I'm working on this football project. Can we talk football for like 2 minutes? 1997 yeah. Football. So what do you remember?
97 or 98?
1997.
97, the Vikings' first playoff win in the Denny Green era.
Yes, but
Randall Cunningham comes in and beats the Giants.
What do you remember? So I was doing my Barry Sanders entry, and I rewatched.
Is that the game where he had negative 1 yard or something against the Packers?
No. So he has 13 carries for negative 1 yards against the Packers. I mentioned that in my Bryce Pop entry. That's not in. I figured it doesn't make sense to like talk about how much Barry Sanders sucked in that one game. The weird thing about Barry Sanders that I think the kids won't remember is, like, he would frequently have 10 carries for 2 yards at halftime or something. And then he would just usually bust out, you know, a 50-yarder. And then it would look like, oh, you know, 11 carries, 55 yards. That's a fine, you know, first couple quarters. But he was stopped a lot. So anyway, in the Vikings-Lions game, you guys, do you remember this? It's the second to last game of 1997. I think you still need a win to make the playoffs.
If you remind me more, I mean, I obviously watched the game.
So the Lions have maybe the Lions are.
I think the Vikings went 9-7 that season, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
Yeah. So the Lions are 8-6 with 2 games to go at Minnesota and then home against the Jets.
Yeah, I'm looking. So the Vikings were 8-2 and then they lost 5 in a row. So yeah, they needed a win.
Yeah, but they didn't get it. So they shut down Barry Sanders like to an insane degree. He has zero, negative two, zero, negative, like, they just keep running to Sanders on first and second down. Scott Mitchell throws, like, a ball 20 feet over Herman Moore, Brett Perryman's head, and then they punt. And the Vikings are leading the entire game, and then eventually Sanders does his thing, and
yeah, spoiler alert, he had 138 yards, so.
Yeah, 138, but, like, all on
19 carries.
Yeah, but all on three. All of them on three. Like, he was literally like 13-for-2 at one point, and then
that was what Barry Sanders did.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then he had 7.3 yards per carry for the game. So, you know, not a bad game, obviously.
So, but I'm trying to. I wish I'd like taken notes for the game, but the Vikings lost in like the most painful way imaginable. I'm shocked you don't remember it. The whole game is on YouTube if you want to rewatch it, December 14th, 1997. But
14-13 Vikings' fifth loss in a row. No, thank you.
Yeah, so Scott Mitchell connects with Herman. The Lions get down, I'd say, here. Let me take you through the end of this game. Because the Vikings lose this game like in 30 different ways. And then next week, the worst Jet game of my life. The Jets and the Lions are each 9-6. A rare interdivisional, basically playoff game where the loser misses the playoffs at 9-7.
Won't ever happen anymore.
Was, you know, it was probably only the Jets knocked out the Giants once, I think, in 86, but I don't think the Jets also needed the win. And the crazy thing about that game, people should check it out on YouTube, is so Barry Sanders needs like 130-something yards for 2,000. Barry Sanders had 50 yards after two games that year also. He had 20 and 30 in his first two games. So like 2,000 was insane. He actually had 2,000 yards in 14 games. Exactly. Yeah. His final 14 games, he rushes for exactly 14 yards. But wait, so the Viking game for a second. So you guys, I think it's like, it's tied. You guys, Randall Cunningham fumbles, I think. Then
the Vikings are winning 13-7 for like most of the game.
Most of the game. They have a fourth down. John Randall. Randall is like a violent sacker also. I've been watching some John Randall. Like if you get sacked by John Randall, you feel it the next day. So Randall like throws Scott Mitchell like cartoon style through the turf. There's like a cutout of Scott Mitchell in there. The Vikings go 3-and-out again. And then late in the game, the Vikings are still
Randall
winning.
Randall had 3 sacks in this game.
Yeah. The Vikings are winning 13-7. And Eddie Murray has a chip shot to ice the game with 2 minutes left from 37 yards.
Yeah.
And he misses.
No, which the following season, it's not like they'll have a field goal from that distance that goes wrong.
Yeah, he misses from 37.
Yeah.
It's
actually worse because the Vikings, I'm looking, the Vikings take the ball. Mitchell throws an interception. The Vikings start a drive with 2.5 minutes to go on the Lions.
On the 21 and don't score. Yeah.
They gain nothing. Yeah, they get 0 points.
Yeah.
They run off less than a minute of clock.
Yes, it's crazy. They have a terrible pass interference call against them. And then Mitchell connects on 4th and goal from the 1 instead of running with Sanders, which would not have worked. He didn't gain a yard all day, you know, on a and one type play. He hits
Herman Moore.
He hits Herman Moore. By the way, the last play of the game, the guy just looking at the Pro Football Reference.
Cunningham throws a Hail Mary.
Cunningham throws a Hail Mary. It's knocked away by Reggie Brown. Reggie Brown gets paralyzed the next game against the Jets. People forget. The Lions had two players paralyzed in the 90s. Mike Utley in the early 90s. People remember, I think, a little more. And then Reggie Brown in the late 90s. So the next game, the same thing. The Jets lead the Lions the whole game. Each team needs the playoffs to make it. This is Bill Parcells' first year. Neil O'Donnell, who Parcells loathes, is the quarterback. So he's, you know, he had brought in Foley, but Foley got hurt. So Ray Lucas, do you remember Ray Lucas, who's now like an analyst for the Jets?
Yeah, of course.
So Ray Lucas, who was an athlete, you know, a quarterback from Rutgers who was not, never really developed. Now he'd probably play quarterback, but that back then he was like more of an athlete, third quarterback. He throws an interception. O'Donnell throws an interception. And then late in the game, the Jets are driving, and Leon Johnson, their great kick returner and third down back, gets a halfback pass and throws a horrific interception into the end zone. But the Lions cornerback, Bryant Westbrook, is lying fully out of bounds when he catches it. Like 60% of his body, his entire back, is just lying out of bounds for like 5 seconds right in front of two referees. They don't call it. There's no instant replay till 99. The announcers are going bananas. Like, this makes no sense. But there's no way to overturn it. It's like the worst. Watch it. It's the worst call you've ever seen. It's insane. And then
I think if you watch mid-90s football again, every game has three just atrocious calls.
Atrocious calls, and it's like there's
people love to complain about
instant
replay now, but they forget how bad it was before.
And I think the refs are better. I just think the refs are more professional now. It's so frustrating.
It's also, by the way, our TVs are so much better that it's so much clearer when they miss a call now. So they have to be better.
Yeah. So Sanders keeps getting stuffed. He's at like 1997, 1998. He had nothing, but then he broke out with like a couple 50 and 40 yarders in the second half. To have a drive. Then on 3rd and 3, he gets 2 yards. They stuff him, and then he eventually gets the 2,000, and then he on the last play of the game to ice the game, he runs for 53 yards, which gives him exactly 2,000 over the last 14 games of the year. But really, like, I was crying afterwards. It's the worst loss of any sport in my life. The Jets had 50 opportunities to win the game. They were
so
much better.
So they missed the playoffs because of that?
They missed the playoffs because of they threw a backup running back threw an interception on 1st and goal from the 9 or 10 that was not even close to being caught.
Who's your coach?
No, it's the first year of Parcells. The story goes that Parcells hated Neil O'Donnell so much that he didn't want him to throw like the winning pass in the game.
Wait, Parcells was never the head coach of the Jets for a game. I thought it was just for a few minutes in the offseason.
No, you're talking about your thing of Belichick.
Oh, sorry, Belichick. Excuse me. Yeah.
So no, so Belichick's the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Parcells is the coach, and like they have, you know, they're gonna at worst case they're gonna tie the game because they have the ball at the 9 or 10 yard line. And he throws this, you know, it's one of these running backs like, don't throw it because there's only 3 lines in the end zone. Everyone should watch the play on YouTube. It's bananas. And it is the worst call you've ever seen in your life. It's astonishing how bad it is. And imagine like not being able to do anything. And the Jets are famously the big winners of no instant replay in 98 when Vinny Testaverde has the phantom touchdown. You know, when he doesn't even come close to scoring. Do you remember this play?
The Vinny John? No.
You don't remember the phantom touchdown? YouTube right now, Vinny Testaverde, Seahawks touchdown. I cannot believe you don't know this play. It's like a famous play that brought back instant replay. So 98, the Jets are very good, but they're trailing Pete Carroll's, no, Dennis Erickson, excuse me, Seahawks. Late in the game, the Jets have fourth and goal from the 5. Are you searching for this play?
Yeah, I'm watching it right now. Let's watch.
I cannot believe you don't know. I'm not watching, but I cannot believe you.
Testaverde sneaks it up the middle.
Yeah. So I was at this game, but it's the opposite end zone. We had seats in the end zone, and this is all the way away. So I did not know until the
now, it looked from the naked eye on the play that he did score.
Yeah, but replay show he barely gets to the one.
Let's see.
It's crazy how not close he doesn't get.
That's on fourth down?
Yeah, fourth and goal. It's the worst play call ever.
What a ballsy play call.
Yeah, and Vinny was not a scrambler.
He's definitely short, by the way.
Alex, nobody's ever argued that he scored. He doesn't even get to the one, I don't think.
Well, nobody. I mean, the referees did.
Yeah, the referees did argue. But I didn't know that he didn't score. I thought it was just, oh, you know, a little controversial, but, like, there was no instant replay. But then you get
at the stadium, yeah.
You get in the car, you know, where they're obviously not going to replay that play, you know, as a Jet home game, and that was exciting. Anyway, so let's get into number 10. But, yeah, the Lions, I'd say they can't win. If you play those games, I know it's only two coin flips. If they play this game 10,000 times, they don't win both of them, except for that scenario. You know, the Lions are just a blessed franchise. What can I say?
Yeah. All right, are we ready to jump into number 10?
Okay, so number 10, I think it was supposed to be like 11 last week, but I got copyright struck, so I flipped 10 and 11. But this is a great call. This is the Olympics. I didn't go Olympics crazy, even though I'm an Olympics guy. But this is a clearly great call.
This is a famous moment, right?
Very
this
famous
is where,
moment.
This is where Michael Phelps is trying to set the record, and he needs his teammates' help.
Yes, yes. You explained it so well. So Michael Phelps is going for 8 gold medals, but he really needs some of them are absolute locks. This is, I believe, the second of 8 races, but also one of the 2 races where it's going to be extremely hard.
Were the French like the co-favorites coming in?
The French are favorites. You work out the times. The French are favorites. It's pretty close, but outside of Phelps, like the bottom of the French team is a little deeper than the bottom of the U.S. team. But also,
Lizak is Jewish, isn't he?
Yes, Jason Lizak, who's about to race. So it's also one of the U.S. weaker swimmers against France. Used their best swimmer, Lane Bernard, in the anchor spot, fourth, whereas the U.S. decided to, like, oh, let's just, like, try and, go out really fast. So then Lizak maybe is the slowest of the 4. He was not winning medals he wasn't qualifying for, the 100-meter, 200-meter freestyle, like, individually.
So isn't that weird to put him in the fourth position?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It was an interesting strategy. He's a veteran.
Now, is there a coach? Is it a captain? Like, does Phelps decide this? Who decides?
No. Oh, there's, like, 12. Oh, yeah. U.S. swimming is a real operation. Very serious. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's many coaches in U.S. swimming. I mean, this is, talking about...
But there's got to be one person who ultimately...
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a head coach of U.S. swimming, of course. But, okay. I mean, U.S. swimming is the most successful Olympic operation of any country, any sport. Like, there's a lot of people making these decisions. They're making 30... Right, they're winning 30
Olympics, medals. Right?
This is the 2008 Olympics.
2008, excuse me. Oh, this is Beijing. Oh, my brother was there.
Yes, this is 2008
Not
Beijing.
At this event, I don't think. But
and so 227, you're up, right? Let's yep. Let Rowdy Gaines.
All right. So are we watching? Are we watching the? Is it the final lap of the final racer? What are we watching?
The whole call is so good for a really long time, but we'll get into it. I don't know. This was copyright struck, so I just had to find a new version. But I believe what we're going to do is we're going to watch the third swimmer's finish, and then it's back and forth. It's two, it's one length of the pool each way. So we're going to watch,
So we're
starting,
watching the third swimmer finish
and then Lizak versus Elaine Bernard. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Tell me when to press play.
Jason Lizak is going to have to make up some ground on Elaine Bernard, who stands 6'5" and can absolutely.
This is freestyle. They're each swimming as fast as they can.
They can do it.
They can swim whatever they want.
Jason Lizak has been there how many
right.
times in his
what?
Career?
Freestyle, you can swim whatever you want.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it's not a medley.
I just don't think he can do it. He's trying to ride that wave as much as possible. Yeah.
And at this point, the announcers have written the U.S. up.
Lee Zach, the world record, a three-time Olympian. World record is absolutely going to be shattered here. The United States trying to hang on.
Fourth place is on world.
I mean, he's way behind here.
Yeah,
Australia is in bronze territory right now, but Lizak is closing a little bit on Bernard. Can the veteran chase him down and pull off a shocker here? Well, there's no doubt that he's tightening up. Bernard is losing to ground. Here comes Lizak. Unbelievable at the end. He's done it. The U.S. has done it. He did it. A new world record. He did it. Phelps' hopes alive.
Disappointed Frenchies.
46.06 split for Lizak. What a clutch fast swim when they needed it.
I think it would have been like the world record if he hadn't, you know, it doesn't count if you don't start the race.
Now, the explanation is that Lizak, or that the French guy, tries to do one extra half. Like,
yes, the French guy gets caught, basically. It's funny because even when they say he's catching up, it's not super close. Right, it's still like it's still
at that point.
At that point, yeah. it's still not close. Remember, the announcers have already written them off. But yeah, what happens is Bernard and Phelps is, I think, the beneficiary of this similar thing a second time, where it's like he makes with Cavitch, like he makes a move, but his stroke gets him, you know, 80% of the way there, and then he has to do a whole nother stroke, and in that time, Lizak wins. I mean, the announcer, they also have really good eyes. Like, it's not so clear at any point that Lizak is going to win, even after he wins.
You only know because of the computer announcing it.
Yeah, and so there was, if I had played the extra minute, which we did not have access to, they're talking about how, like, Bernard is doing insane trash talking. Like, they were just absolutely smack talking and guaranteeing victory, the French, against the U.S. Like, it was obvious to them that they were going to win.
During, we mean as the guys are swimming.
No. Like in the lead up to the Olympics. Like they were, this was like the race of the Olympics. They thought they would win. They knew that they just needed to be close to Lizak to win it. And then, you know, once they have the lead by a decent margin, you figure it's over. Bernard is, you know, I don't remember if he won this event in individual, but he's up there. Yeah, that's a great moment in Jewish sports history. Also, Jason Lizak, a Jewish guy.
And wasn't Dara, what's her name, who was in four Olympics as a swimmer? She was also Jewish, I think.
Yeah, Dara Torres. Yeah, well, she was in a lot of Olympics. Yeah, she came back in her 40s. All right, so that was fun. That was Dan Hicks, Radigans. I also like that he says, like, unbelievable at the end. He did it. And then the Rowdy Gaines, the color commentator, just yells he did it. Like, that's what you should do. Like, do you believe in miracles? The if there was a color commentator there, he's just like, yeah, miracles. Do you believe in them? Like, just repeat what the guy said. That's a great call for the announcer.
Yeah, it's a great moment. The call's not that amazing.
I think the call's really good. I think because if you have the whole 2 minutes, like, they paint the picture really well. It's like a goosebumps moment, the unbelievable at the end. I disagree. I think it is a really good call. I think if it's not swimming, it's even higher.
I got goosebumps watching it, but I don't know if it's because of the call or just because of the, you know. I mean, the most iconic moment, I think, is the Phelps flexing.
Yes.
In, like, joyous celebration.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like the still shot of that is more famous, I think, than any audio.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah. All right, okay, so let's get to number nine. Number nine, we are going back to Europe.
Yeah,
is this our last soccer one that we'll see? No, I don't think so.
No,
we have more soccer.
One more soccer after this, but this is the last one in Europe. Okay, so 4:23. All right, so let me paint the picture. Okay, it's the 2012 Premiership. It's the end of the season, and it's the final day. Manchester United and Manchester City are both trying to. They're both vying. You know, usually it's wrapped up beforehand, but here it is going back and forth all day. British people, I've said on the podcast, are very bad at sports math. They don't have a lot of statistics like baseball. So even to do like, all right, this team needs to win, but if they tie, then what do they need to do, is always way above the head of any British announcer. I say this from 30 years of watching European sports. They act like it's, you know, doing insane calculus just to try and figure out all the permutations. Like, if they ever had, like, you know, these five teams must, like, lose or tie for the, you know, Detroit Lions to make the playoffs at 8-7-1, their heads would absolutely explode. Anyway.
Yeah.
So we're going to be watching the Manchester City game. The Manchester United game is like a few seconds ahead in terms of ending. They're going to win, meaning they win the league if Manchester City ties. And Manchester City is tied 2-2 93 minutes into their game. There's 5 minutes of stoppage time, so there will be There will be about 2 minutes left to the Man City game.
And they're playing Queen. Who are they playing again?
They're playing QPR, Queen's Park Rangers.
Okay. So they need a goal in order to win the Premier League.
Yes. Now, I didn't play this whole clip.
Now, is this before Man City? Is this like Man City's first title?
Yes, this is Man City's first title.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to...
They had sort of come out of nowhere in the previous couple seasons. To, like, Manchester United...
Well, they didn't come out... I mean, they came out of nowhere in the sense they were bought by somebody really rich. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, Man City needs to win.
Become like, but Manchester United had just had utterly controlled that rivalry for years.
I mean, Man City fell out of the Premiership even.
Yeah. And now they have a chance to, you know, to grab, not just win the Premier League, but grab it from Manchester
from
United.
From their hated rivals. Now, okay, so now we're not going to listen to the whole thing, but Manchester City is down 2-1, and they score at the beginning of stoppage time.
Oh, so they've already scored a goal.
So they've scored a goal. Yeah, they scored a goal 91 minutes into the game.
So they need two goals in less than 5 minutes, and they already got one.
They already got one. Okay. And we are at 4:23, right?
Okay, let's watch right now.
QBR fans are jumping up and down. Maybe there's more news, more favorable news for them.
So obviously the home fans are rooting for Manchester United, who have just won 1-0.
Yeah, so Manchester United has just won.
Rooney goal was enough for the 3 points. Manchester City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero!
Very upset, Wayne
Manchester
Rooney.
Manchester United gets no time to celebrate. Their game ends, and within moments, they find out.
Yeah, it's very cool that it's split screen. It's live. It's a great idea that soccer had that the NFL adopted of like playing all the final season's games at the same time, basically.
It's a great moment. I actually think the announcer almost ruins it. You'll never see anything like this. Watch it. Drink it
yeah,
in.
Yeah, you hate when he says it. No, but the Aguero goal call is amazing.
No, the Aguero you hear the ball goal hit call the net. Is amazing, but after that, he's like, watch it. We're watching.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Drink it in. Are you drinking it in? Yeah. I mean, they like to drink.
Well, I mean, I like the reference to Anchorman.
As a sports fan, but not a diehard.
You don't need to tell us this is history being written. Like, we know these things.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious. As a diehard sports fan, but not necessarily a diehard English soccer fan. So, Liverpool was going to win a very rare title this year.
I love the QPR guy, by the way, running in and kicking it himself right after.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's what you got to do every time they score. Get mad at the ball. It's the ball's fault. So, sure. What do you think? Should Liverpool be named the champion if they don't continue the EPL?
I mean, I'm a Liverpool fan. So here's the thing. To me, it's crystal clear and obvious. Yes, I might be biased. I'm a Liverpool fan. If it's an American sport, it's different because American sports don't give the title to the team winning the regular
season. Right. Nobody's going to be named the champion this year.
We have playoffs, but there's no playoffs. Like the Premier League winner is whoever has the most points at the end of the regular season.
Yeah, but are we only saying it's obvious?
Also, Liverpool's up by so much. It's not even like it was. It's not even like.
Yeah, but should that matter?
Games.
Of course, that's true that Liverpool is going to win. But should that matter? Like, let's say it was going to be. Let's say you know they were winning by one. Would you consider them the champions?
What
still?
I'm saying is, if they were winning by 1 point, then you could make an argument. Well, there were four matches left, and second place, let's say Man U, had an easier schedule. Like, then you can argue all those hypotheticals. In this scenario, Liverpool had already won. So they've won. There's no disputing that they've won. It's sort of you take away the joy because it's sort of this anticlimactic celebration eventually. But yes, of course they won. They won the Premier League in 2020.
Okay, well, I don't know. I don't think they're giving it to them.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. But well, in terms of the consequences of winning, like in terms of the Champions League and all that stuff, obviously they will have been considered the winners.
Say that again?
In terms of like the Champions League, they will have been considered.
They're not sure. They don't know.
What do you mean? The Champions League isn't. So how's the Champions League deciding?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. I mean, obviously that makes sense, but they are certainly not committing to that. They're not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, Manchester City is also banned from the Champions League, speaking of Man City. They have a punishment. So
Liverpool won, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, they certainly were going to win. It's annoying. Yeah. Germany is starting. Spain is starting. I think Italy was harder hit. I don't know what their deal is going to be. I don't know if the EPL is going to restart.
Yeah.
It's funny that all these sports, there's no sports, but like I still will not watch the Bundesliga. Like it's just not. I love soccer, but like the bad teams in Germany are just so bad. It's so top heavy.
Well, but I mean, so is La Liga.
Yeah, no, of course. The only teams worth watching are Madrid and Barcelona. Everyone knows
La Liga is a Kleinerman. I can tell you, like every contract, those two teams are like.
It's only those teams. Shoulders like, above the rest. Once in a while, you'll get a team. When I was a kid, they would be like Deportivo, La Coruña, or like Valencia. But you, I mean, and Athletic Madrid is great. Like the third best team in Spain could still be competitive in the Champions League. But Germany, you know, although Germany does have the new. What's it called? The Red Bull team that is, you know, with money became very good all of a sudden. So it's not just Bayern Munich, but the bad teams of Germany are just useless. Anyway, we haven't had a ton of hockey on this clip, but we're going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, 1994. The famous clip. How much do you remember this as a non-New Yorker who was not yet living in New York?
I know the clip. I have no idea the context.
Okay, so we are in double overtime. Rangers-Devils, hated rivalry. Martin Brodeur, Mike Richter, 94 Eastern Conference Finals. Howie Rose on the call, WFAN 660 in New York. Remember, Mark Messier guaranteed that the Rangers would win Game 6, famously, and they did. So they won Game 6, and now it's...
So this is Game 7.
Now this is Game 7. We're in double OT.
Are we in OT or what?
Double OT.
Double OT, okay. Okay.
Kachisov for the Devils plays it cross ice into the far corner. Matteau swoops in to intercept. Matteau behind the net. Swings it in front. He scores! Matteau! And the Rangers have one more hill to climb, baby! But it's Mount Vancouver! The Rangers are headed to the final!
That's a fantastic
call. Amazing call. And it's like, there's no way he had that. Did he have that plan? It's Mount Vancouver, which is a real mountain. One more hill to climb. That's a great call. Howie Rose. Do you know anything about Howie Rose?
No.
So Howie Rose has been the Mets radio announcer for decades. He is like just absolutely, you know, lives and dies with the Mets, absolutely loves the Mets, knows everything about them. A little bit of a nerdy guy, but, you know, he looks like he's still in the 1980s a little bit. Like, joined Twitter, I think, during the pandemic for the first time. But he, you know, like both the Mets announcers, Gary Cohen, who used to be a radio guy and now is their TV guy, like, can, you know, basically are like legit Met nerds who know every single thing about the team, you know, since the 1980s. And have also embraced, you know, especially Gary's case, you know, analytics and they're, you know, the best of the best. All right, number 7, it's Sunday night, and for the first time in like 6 weeks, we're not talking about Michael Jordan, but number 7, people will be very familiar with from last week. This is Bob Costas, Bulls Jazz, RIP Jerry Sloan. A lot of people did not know Jerry Sloan was a Bull, right?
As a player.
Yeah.
I knew that, yeah.
I mean, his numbers retired as a Bull. Like, that's, you know.
He was a shooting guard who would average like 7-8 rebounds a game.
Yeah.
He was like the Tom Gola of his era,
which is a
guy from the 50s, so no one knows who I'm talking about. But he's a shooting guard. Got lots of.
Who's
rebounds.
The shooting guard now who gets a lot of? I mean, I guess Harden, but like who? But trying to think of a guy who's not really a great passer, but
yeah, I'm talking about a guy who averages like 14-8, and there's nobody like that.
A shooting guard.
Like Tom Gola would average 15 points, 10 rebounds a game as a shooting guard in the 50s, and then Jerry Sloan did the same thing in the 70s for the Bulls.
UConn had a guy, Daniel Hamilton, who would get like 9 rebounds a game as a shooting guard. And I thought like, oh, that's a transferable skill to the NBA. But he really has only played like 20 or 30 games in the league. But I don't know. Usually I love guards who could rebound. That's always a favorite of mine.
Yeah. All right. So let's. But doesn't that mean that they're just like they're not out on the 3-point line? So they're not shooters?
I think they just have a skill for rebounding. My opposite pet peeve is big men who are like slightly bad, not like terrible. But I hate that big man who's like 18.8 and 7, you know?
Yeah, like Brook Lopez.
A Brook Lopez type. Well, Brook Lopez is very unusual. Yeah. I'm trying to think of like, even like Ewing sometimes his rebound totals would be a little low.
No, Ewing was a fine rebounder.
He was fine, but I'm trying to think who was a guy, a big man.
Bob McAdoo?
McAdoo was a bad rebounder. I don't know.
But again, I don't know if he was a bad rebounder as much as he was shooting 20-footers, so he wasn't near the basket so much.
Yeah, maybe Gugliotta, but he was a little bit more of a 3 than a 4. I'm trying to think. Like, all right, he'll come to me.
Yeah, I would say towards the end of his career, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the mid to late 80s.
Yeah, Weber towards the end of his career, I think, became a bad rebounder also. But this is all just from memory. I'm not sure. All right.
Yeah.
Let's tell me when to press play. Everyone knows what we're talking about.
By the way,
here.
I went back in the last week. I went back and I ranked the if they were making in a dream team like the 12 best players in the NBA every single year.
Yes.
And I did this based purely on stats, so not at all based on team performance or anything like
or
that. So
who
I had
Michael Jordan allows
on
the team.
The Chester All-Star teams. No. I just did the 12 best statistical players every year. So again,
what
I
did you do? The 12 best Americans?
No. I'm not doing literally the Dream Team. I'm just saying, I was actually doing it from Game of Zones. So Game of Zones, spoiler alert, is the Dream Team comes back, and so they have to pick the 12 best living players to go play the Dream Team from '92.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so yeah, so it's Giannis. It's players from any country.
Well, so I asked you this question because for many years. The team would have been 12 Americans. Occasionally, a Gasol or somebody would have slipped through.
Yeah.
So now I'd like to hear, because the U.S. was going to have a big problem, you know, even with, you know, obviously last year with the World Championships, they couldn't get anybody to play. But even at full strength, they're never going to have the best player on the floor. And in the past, they've never not had the best player on the floor.
Because of Giannis, right? Now, you're saying.
How about this? Let me ask you a question.
I mean, it's not so crystal clear that Giannis is better than LeBron in like a one-game situation.
Okay, fine. But I don't. And it also wasn't crystal clear that LeBron was going to play in the Olympics. Let me ask you a question: how many times before this decade would a European player have made the Dream Team?
Well, so I can tell you because I'm looking at my list of all the players who ever made the team.
Yes.
And going all the way back to 1947, I have a total of 212 players.
Okay.
And so I'm going to scroll down to the one. Peja Stojakovic makes it once.
Okay, but not as a starter.
No, you know, but he's one of the 12 guys on the team.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm scrolling up to see any other guys, non-Americans, who made it. Oh, Andrei Kirilenko makes it once.
Okay, but also probably is like the 11th man on the team.
Yeah, something like that. Manu Ginobili makes it once.
Mm-hmm.
Luka Doncic makes it this year, of course, but, you know, we're talking about how things are very different now.
Yeah.
Still going up. I'm looking at the one-timer still. Okay, Vucevic made it last year.
Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah.
Now, who made it this year? And I guess the Gasols are the other. Tony Parker or maybe the Gasols.
Yeah, hold on. Joel Embiid.
And Dirk. Yeah.
In the last couple of years, which other non-Americans have made it? Now I'm up to the three-timers club. Yao Ming made it three times.
Oh, wow.
Not an American, of course. I'm not positive about the nationality of all these guys from the 50s and 60s, but I assume they're all Americans.
No, they're all Americans, I think. Yeah. I don't think
Jokic, of course, has made it the last number of years.
I don't think there was ever a non-American Rookie of the Year until like very recently, and now there hasn't been. There's, I think, Brogdon's been the only American Rookie of the Year.
Paul Gasol's made it. Paul Gasol made it four times. Giannis has made it the last four times.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Now we're up to the five timers club.
There shouldn't be anybody unless
Dominic
Marc
Gasol's Wilkins,
there.
You know, technically born in France, made it six times.
No, he played for the U.S. Yeah,
but he's an American citizen. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean Duncan Elijah one don't count either.
Yeah, and then are we up to the eight, the nine timers club?
Nobody's going
to
be there. No, it's not.
Yeah, we're not going to have any
just
non-Americans
Dirk. Just Dirk.
I don't know. Dirk Nowitzki makes it 11 times.
Yeah.
And
but tell us this year's team.
And then Elijah one, of course, who becomes an American, makes it 13 times. So the 16 time club is Malone, LeBron, and Kareem, which means that next year LeBron would be all alone is in the 17 time club. Duncan, by the way, right behind them at 14.
Mm-hmm.
So this year's team. So again, I'm doing it purely statistically, and I'm not doing it based on, you know, total games played. It's per game numbers. So Karl-Anthony Towns is on this team because, right, you know, he's putting up ridiculous numbers, even though he missed half the season. And, you know, but yeah. So the starting five I have is the best players in the league right now. So it's Davis, Giannis, LeBron, and then Doncic and Harden in the backcourt.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course Curry and Durant are injured, so they're not on this team. And then Kawhi's the first guy off the bench. Dame Lillard, Jokic, Kat, Embiid. Trae Young, you know, who I think stinks, but he's putting up massive numbers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but that's not what we're here for. Let's get to Michael Jordan's final moments as a Chicago Bull. So this is number seven on your list, right?
This is number seven.
So we're starting. We're starting with the Jazz have the ball.
Yeah.
They're up one. There's 30 seconds to go.
Correct. All right, tell me when to press play.
Jordan with 43. They swat at it and steal it.
Here Jordan with Chicago. The steal. No timeout is called.
Seconds. Almost walked.
17 seconds from game seven or from championship number six. Jordan.
Push off.
Open. Chicago with the lead. Timeout,
I'd say
Utah.
Kukoc, Rodman, Pippen, and Kerr.
2 seconds left. Michael Jordan.
None of them even had their hands up. Like, none of them with 45 even considered points. The idea that they were going to get the
at
ball
the
here.
End of the game, you gotta get
they're
it out
basically
of his
standing
hands.
Out of bounds.
Jordan frees himself up for a clean look. The greatest thing about Jordan is he has all the tricks. That's why it's so difficult to
shut up,
him.
Isaiah. Finally,
if that's
here comes
the last image of Michael Jordan, How magnificent is it?
Wait, is Isaiah? Is Isaiah the play-by-play guy here? I mean, the color commentator?
Isn't it Isaiah and Doug Collins?
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
I mean, that's what it sounds like. But, you know, we remember Bob Costas' line, if that's the last image of Michael Jordan. But that actually doesn't come till really late because Isaiah gives like a 20-second, you know, quote-unquote analysis. You got to get the ball out of Michael Jordan's hands. Well, thanks for that.
What's funny, I'm surprised Jordan didn't have enough pull to have Isaiah not be the announcer. Because Doug Collins is his original coach, right? Doug Collins, I think he – unless he –
You think Jordan is deciding who is the NBC callers here?
I don't think he is, but I think he could have and probably should have.
I don't think he hated Isaiah that much. It's not like Isaiah's trashing him. Isaiah's busy, complimenting him. I think so.
Let's say it makes sense. Isaiah did not last long.
To swallow his words, you know, to praise him.
It makes sense that Isaiah.
It's like
did not
Mordecai
last
leading Haman through the streets, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. You've been all about the home runs. You've had every home run record on our list. You've had Barry Bonds hit 73. You've had Barry Bonds hit 756. Excuse me.
Yeah.
So we have Mark McGwire's 62 next.
But a lot of people wanted this on the list. This was the most requested of them.
Well, this one has to be on the list, yeah. Yes. You know, the Bonds ones in 2001, you know, is after 9/11. And then by the time he hit 756, everybody hates him. So neither one of those was an iconic moment. But this was like just a massive, massive moment. Everybody wants
And
this.
They're making I think it was in a couple weeks, we're going to have a 30 for 30 on McGwire and Sosa. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. I had just moved to – I moved to New York City, to Washington mm-hmm. Heights, actually, which is mm-hmm. heavily Dominican. In August, I guess, of 1998. And so every time Sosa hit another home run, the city would just explode. There was such joy.
That's very
and
cool.
And I always hated McGwire, and I was rooting for Sosa also.
I was rooting for McGwire.
Well, yeah, because you hate people.
No, I wasn't a Cubs guy. I didn't like the Cubs.
Oh. I don't know. Sosa seemed like such a lovable, friendly guy at the time.
No, everybody liked both of them. I wasn't anti-Sosa. I was just rooting for McGwire to break the record. I think history probably neither of them are monsters, but neither of them are great guys.
Yeah.
All right, tell me when the press play. Steve Traxel on the hill.
It's crazy, even the Cubs don't embrace Sosa anymore, so not ideal.
Yeah, it is a little weird.
Gone! There it is! 62!
Barely gets it.
Gets
the touch first base.
It was the shortest home run of the year, famously.
Yeah. But like his body, he looks like a cartoon.
Oh, yeah. No. He has needles coming out of him.
I didn't remember this. A guy does run onto the field, but unlike in the 70s, he gets corralled way before.
Oh, yeah, He's still in jail. It's just crazy. He hugs, I assume that's Scott Servais. Every single Cub, he stops and talks to them on the home run trot. It is. Yeah. The Cubs are excited that he did this, which sort of makes sense.
Oh, it's
except
great because he does it with Sosa on the field. It's amazing.
It's amazing, except he is competing. Like in theory, like the Mets or the Dodgers should be more excited because they had no
wild card
dog in the fight. They're competing with each other, playoffs and for the home run race. What does Sosa have at this point? Like 56? Here's the thing: McGwire and Sosa do the famous fist bump thing. They have a whole handshake. They're hugging and kissing for 5 minutes. Like legitimately. Meaningful hugs, right? How do they know each other? Did they know each other and never played together?
Well, they've been playing in all-star games and stuff. Now he goes to hug the Marises.
Yeah, that's a nice touch. Are the McGuires there when Bonds breaks it? I can't imagine. McGuire's grandparents. Yeah. So what? And this is, just for people who don't know, he breaks it on September 8th.
Now, I got to say, the call, there's not that much to the call.
Yeah.
But there doesn't need to be. I think Buck is fine here.
But he hits it an octave higher than, you know, certainly than Buck normally does. And he goes for a little
especially
longer.
Especially this is an early Buck. Early Buck does not emote very much.
Not emote at all. I think now
he's talked about.
He gives his a speech on the great, field. The we don't do that much. We don't. Yeah, I heard a couple episodes. He gives a speech. I don't see a lot of on the field speeches.
Yeah. I really like Joe Buck. I really like his podcast.
Yeah, Joe Buck is.
I didn't know Oliver Hudson, Kate Hudson's brother, who does it with him. But I enjoy. They've had good guests, and
he never mentions that he's Kate Hudson's brother, other than very frequently.
Yeah, every 5 seconds. Yeah, he mentions Kurt Russell's his stepdad. He mentions the whole family nonsense.
Kurt Russell's essentially his dad, I think. I believe his father is.
But I'm looking at this list. We have Joe Buck at 6, and we have Joe Buck at 5, and then Buck.
No spoilers.
So
very Buck heavy. All right,
so let's
go to
number five.
Yeah, the most important moment in your life.
I have seen, I mean, I we had a podcast shortly thereafter, and I told you it was the greatest moment of my life. And,
yes.
I've watched number five in every permutation literally hundreds of times, like literally.
I'd say one of the great regrets of this podcast is that Dr. Jen was famously filming you, and you sort of scared her away, and she left the house even.
Yeah. It's a regret for me also. I would have liked to have seen the video, honestly.
It would have been such a cool video to see.
Yes.
Also, like, I've seen you excited during, like, regular Vikings games, and the noises you make are, like, subhuman. Like, you're like, so I can only imagine you would look very strange, you know? I mean, yeah. I've watched football at my friend Morty's for many years, and you're the only person, and, like, the volume's on, like, 100 out of 100. Remember, watching at 3 in the morning and he has children. So, like, no one has ever complained. A neighbor's never complained. No one's ever complained except for the time you were there where his wife, who I've never heard like ask anybody to do anything in 10 years, is like, hey, you piped, buddy, you gotta pipe
to
down.
To be fair, if you remember that game, Teddy Bridgewater. Broncos. Yeah, they were playing the Broncos. They're driving to win the game, and Teddy Bridgewater gets sacked in field goal range, strip sack, fumble to lose the game.
Enjoy him, Carolina fans.
Yeah. Okay. So it's the Minneapolis Miracle. There's so many versions of this. Obviously, the local announcer, Paul Allen, is phenomenal. But we're gonna watch Buck. Buck does a really good job on this one.
Yeah.
Dig sideline touchdown, unbelievable. What else do you need to say? Yeah. I've seen this so many times, and I'm looking this version that you've given us, which is the NFL.com version with 5,548,414 views.
Yeah, mostly you.
I'm responsible for literally 200. For sure.
Can I tell you what I did today? My son, I've talked about my son, has his best friends are twins who are Yankee fans.
Yes.
And today was their birthday. Trolls. He invited them over. Yeah. And he invited them over and had a thing. And they came to my room, and I didn't really want them in my room. And I figured, like, oh, how can I get them to leave without, like, starting to, like, threaten to punish them or whatever. So I'm like, hey, guys, come look at this. Let's see if there's any Mets-Yankees clips. And I, like, searched for Mariano Rivera blowing leads against the Mets. So I'm like, do you know this guy? Like, Mariano Rivera is the best pitcher in Yankees history. Let's watch and see what happens. And then it's like, he blew a 1-0 lead. It was a regular season game towards the end of his career. It's like, oh, my God. Like, Rivera, he never gives up a hit. Then, like, another hit. Then, like, Lucas Duda knocks in a couple runs to win the game. And they're like, no. Now show us a clip of the Yankees beating the Mets. So I'm like, I searched. There are none. Like, I don't think the Yankees have ever beaten the Mets. Because they're first graders. Like, how are they going to argue?
Yeah, they're dumb.
And then I found like Piazza hitting a homer off Rivera in the World Series. Like so then finally, like 20 minutes later, they figured it out. They came back to me with like, hey, we found the Yankees beating the Mets. So I'm like, all right, get out of here.
Yeah.
But it's fun to troll 7-year-olds on their birthday.
Yeah. All right. So for those who have been living under a rock or are new to this podcast, the context here is, you know, the Vikings have just had endless playoff miseries, obviously my whole life. This game, they're winning 20-0 at the half, or was it 20-3?
20-3, I think. By the way, the top comment on this YouTube video, the real miracle was Joe Buck actually made a great call. 3,000.
Yeah, unfair. Votes. Joe Buck is great now. I love Joe Buck. All right. So yeah. So the context here. So the so they've blown the lead, and the Saints take a 21-20 lead. The Vikings get the ball back with 2 minutes to go, and Kai Forbath hits a 53-yard field goal. Kai Forbath, who led the league in missed extra points that season, the clutchest kick in Vikings history, 53 yards. To give them a 23-21 lead. But, of course, it doesn't hold because Breeze drives the Saints down the field. Michael Thomas gets a big catch on third down. They get into field goal range. They kick their own field goal. And so it's 24-23 Saints.
Imagine being a Saints fan.
What?
Imagine being a Saints fan.
Yeah.
The loss this year was even stupider.
This is the first of, what, 3 years in a row that they lose a game on the last play of the season?
I mean, the loss this year was just objectively stupid.
But listen, they stole a Super Bowl in 2009 from the Vikings with cheating. So shut the fuck up, Saints.
You
fans.
Don't care. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully Greg Williams will steal another Super Bowl this year.
I have zero sympathy. But, so it's 24-23 Saints. There are 10 seconds to go in the game. The Vikings are on their own 39-yard line. 10 seconds to go. No timeouts. So, right, all the Saints have to do is tackle them anywhere in bounds and the game is over. What the Vikings need is a 25-yard reception and get out of bounds all in less than 10 seconds to give Forbath another chance at a 50-plus-yard field goal. So that's what they're trying to do here.
They're on the 30. Aren't they close to the 40?
They're on the 39-yard line.
Oh, yeah. 39. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, 25 yards would give you about a 50-yard field goal.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess 20 yards if you want to try like a 50.
Keenum's going to try to work the ball on the boundary. Keenum steps into it. Pass is caught. Diggs! Sideline! Touchdown! Unbelievable! Vikings win it!
see Marcus Williams here. He has a shot. I'm not sure really what he's thinking, Joe. He comes in, he's got him dialed in, and he just, all he's got to do is make a play. And even if he catches it, you tackle him in bounds, the game is over. And I know Diggs, he's catching this. He's expecting somebody to hit him. And he turns around. Heck, nobody's there. And he's off to the races, and it's pandemonium.
61 brilliant yards for Stephon Diggs. And Case Keenum has just taken the Minnesota Vikings to the NFC Championship game in a game.
It's also bittersweet looking at Diggs' face now.
Yeah, imagine being so loathsome that you make the greatest play in franchise history. You're still in your prime, and you basically have to be given away because every single person on earth hates you so much.
It's unbelievable. I don't know. I mean, he's gone to Buffalo. The weather's worse. The quarterback's worse. The offense is worse. He's going to be miserable there.
I mean, he is the number one guy. He doesn't have to compete with Thielen, but yeah, man.
But compete with Thielen? Like, that was helping him. He wasn't getting double covered.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
He's a great receiver. He drops the ball a ton. You know, again, he's responsible for the greatest moment of my life, so I'll forever be indebted to him. Except that not, because the next week they go into Philadelphia as favorites, take a 7-0 lead, and then blew it. So, but you know, dig sideline touch on unbelievable. Great call by Buck.
Yeah, very memorable. Everyone knows the call. Okay, let's go. We're gonna go a little longer for number four. It's our top college basketball moment on the countdown. Just completely crazy. I have to admit, as you could open this video to 130, so Villanova leads North Carolina by 3 points. I have to admit, like a lot of the college basketball championships since I have moved, they do not start until, 4:10 a.m. my time. And it's tough. I've fallen asleep before or during a lot of the college football and college basketball championships, even though I'm able to watch an incredible amount of college sports here because the time difference is so great. You know, noon starts on Saturdays. For me, 7 o'clock. It's so easy to watch those games. I stay up for the NCAA tournament, but unless my team is in the championship, and even when UConn was in the championship, I actually fell asleep, but luckily I had a way to watch the UConn-Kentucky game without getting spoiled. So I did not watch this live, which is one of my bigger sporting regrets. But were you watching this game live? Do you remember?
Yes, of course. Yes, I remember this.
All right, so 1:30, we're going to go for 2 minutes here. Tell me when to press play.
It's Barry. We had the hot hand from three in the first half. They're going to have to do something from the outside now. It's Page off balance. Puts it up. They beat him up for the season with his inability to make threes. He kept his composure. This time, the little guy with some major onions to tie this thing up. Incredible.
Think about how famous the Chalmers shot is, and this is so much better than the Chalmers shot.
Yeah.
Like, if it just forces overtime like that shot did, and Villanova doesn't win.
I mean, I don't want to, shit on Page here. It's obviously, like, a legendary, amazing shot. But it's not like, oh, what a great three-point shooter. It's a double clutch. It's a lucky shot.
Oh, yeah. No, if he misses this, it's like, oh, that was an incredibly stupid shot.
Yeah. Oh, there's Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
Gives it to Jenkins for the championship.
Absolutely bonkers. A double onions call.
Double onions.
We got onions on both teams.
And then he starts getting to, like, if the onions are fried. It's so annoying.
Boy, they've got a problem on their hands if they do, because the streamers.
He gets too meta with the onion stuff.
Watch this. And the recognition of
is there any time? What is Nate Tybalt? How would there be time left on the clock? He releases the ball at 0.5. How would there be time left on the clock?
I think he meant, is there time left when he shoots it? I don't think he meant after the shot. Great call. Who's that? Grant Hill? Who says, like, watch Jenkins. Like, he saw it before anybody did, that the play was designed to go to Jenkins. So, great call by Jenkins while everyone else is just...
Yeah, it's a design play. It's a great play by...
Yeah, great play.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to number three.
Yeah, this one makes me happy. This is probably the one of the 50 that I've watched the most by far.
Yeah. I famously watched other than Shabbat, I watched every single moment of the 2010 World Cup. Mm-hmm. It was the summer after I finished law school. Mm-hmm. I would wake up at 9:55 every morning.
You married yet or no?
Yes, I was married. I was living in Einstein. My wife is back in school. I'm ostensibly studying for the bar, which means I would wake up at 9:55 every morning. First game started at 10. The next game started at 12. And the first 4 hours of my day was watching World Cup every day. It was great. So I watched everything. So the U.S., why don't you set this one up for us?
Okay, so it's the third of three games in the U.S.'s group. What's the group? The U.S., Algeria, England, and who's the fourth team in that group? Slovenia. Right? Yeah, Slovenia. Slovenia, they had trailed 2-0, and they tied 2-2. England, they had drawn 1-1 with an own goal. And so they had 2 points, and they needed a win here. A tie would not have done it because they only would have had 3 points, and the U.S. would not have gone through. I think it would have been England and Slovenia who were playing concurrently. And now we're basically 90 minutes into the game, and an atrocious Algeria team who barely tried to score was happy for some reason with a 0-0 draw, even though it would probably have not have done anything for them based, you know, depending on how England Slovenia ultimately was going to shake out. They had one shot that like sort of accidentally hit the post, but if I remember correctly, they did not threaten really the whole game. They played, you know, really bunkered down on defense, so the U.S. had very few scoring opportunities. And finally, they get a little more aggressive in the 90th minute. And tell me when to press play.
To Guardiola, who plays it deep. Saifi with a header. Howard gratefully claims it.
They get a legitimate shot at goal. Very close.
Yeah, Algeria almost scores there.
There are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Crossed, and Dempsey's denied again. And Donovan has scored. Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA. Certainly through. Oh, it's incredible. You could not write a script like this.
Yeah, the scripts I write, they friggin' have offensive fouls and in the games.
I gotta say, I've had goosebumps watching every clip today.
Yeah, no, they're great. They're great.
Yeah.
This is a goosebump. I had goosebumps live. I spiked my daughter Adira watching this. I was so excited. Running around the house like
you
a crazy
spiked
person.
Her?
I spiked her onto the bed. I like slammed her like she was a football. It was great. And she liked it.
Yeah.
I was holding
See,
her.
See, with big Vikings moments, that backfires me because I'm so excited that I sometimes get a little too physical with the kids and I hurt them.
Yeah.
You gotta be careful.
And Dempsey is denied.
Dempsey has the chance. Yeah, it gets stopped by the keeper. But you got to control that rebound.
It's crazy because Algeria like just had 10 guys there all game. And then they're like, hey, let's try and win this for 1 minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, Donovan. Why would you want him at the next World Cup, freaking your Klinsmann? Why would you bring him? You're a moron. Yeah. But that's incredible. Ian Dark is the best. It's sad that ESPN lost the World Cup because there's no more Ian Dark. Landon Donovan.
Instead of a number two and a number one, you have two calls tied for number one, which it's the same call. It's a legendary call, and then a sort of a repeat reference to the call 20 years later.
Yes. Yeah. I figured if I had a 3, a 2, and then a 1A and 1B, you'd be like, well, actually, 10 is 11.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do it. Number two, somehow, I think there's no home favoritism here. We have two pro Minnesota calls in the final five. Not a bad look for Alex C.
Yeah. I had no input on this.
No input. All right. Tell me when to press play.
All right. So we'll just with the context here. It's the 1991 World Series.
Mm-hmm.
Which when ESPN ranked all 100 World Series a few years ago, they ranked it the best World Series of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And considering the fact that it's not too historical, it's not like the Yankees against the Cardinals, I think that's even more impressive. Because if it's the Yankees against Cardinals, it'd be number one by
there are very few. Kirby Puckett's really the only superstar on either team.
Yeah, so these were two teams that had been last place teams the year before.
Yeah.
So nothing's expected of them. Terry Pendleton is the MVP of the NL. No one's ever heard of him. The Braves have, you know, Tom Glavine and John Smoltz.
Yeah, but they're not Glavine and Smoltz yet.
Yeah, they're not Glavine and Smoltz yet. They're 22 and 23 years old.
And they don't add Maddox till when, 93?
Yeah, Maddox is still on the Cubs at this point. It's Steve Avery is their other young star.
Yeah, pitcher. Avery's their third starter, and I believe their fourth starter is Lee Brandt, who's going to be on the hill in Game 7.
Yeah. In this clip.
I'm saying, in the 11th inning or wherever this is.
So the series, like the 87 series, the Twins won every single home game and then lost every single road game. So the Twins take a 2-0 lead in the series. 8-year-old Alex goes to Game 1, is sitting next to Gary Gaetti's father. Gary Gaetti hits a home run in that game. Or not next to, but like, you know, like a ro- like right near him, and he's like, "That's my son, that's my son." And then they like come interview him like later on during the game. They go into Atlanta, they lose all three, so they come home down 3-2, And Kirby in the locker room, in the clubhouse before the game, says, get on my back, guys. I'm taking this one. He steals a home run from Lonnie Smith in like the sixth inning of this game. And almost, by the way, doubles off the runner on second base because he also has a great throwback into the infield or first base. He has a double. He scores a run. I think maybe he has a triple in this game. So he's like 2 for 4. And it's coming up to bat in the bottom of the 11th inning. Also, important context here is that Bobby Cox, who will become a Hall of Fame manager, this is the first of, I think, 14 consecutive years that the Braves win their division. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So they go worst the first, but then they win the division 14 years in a row. Bobby Cox has a lot of bad moves in this game. Charlie Lee Brent is a slow, soft-tossing lefty. And he's throwing against, like, and he's facing, like, the heart of the Twins order, all righties. So it really doesn't make any sense why they send Lee Brent.
I don't remember who else they had in the bullpen. But,
so
you know,
I just listened to a podcast where they watched, like, my Twins podcast, like most baseball podcasts, have nothing to do right now. So they're mm-hmm. rewatching old classic Twins games and talking about them. The Braves had other guys in the bullpen. And even if, so basically, I think it doesn't make any sense what they're doing here. The explanation probably is that because Lee Brent had already warmed up, like you can't warm a guy up three times and then sit him down.
Right.
And so on the previous inning, I think the previous inning, the Twins had two guys on base and then it hit into a double play to end the inning. So they probably assumed when they were getting ready for Lee Brent at that point that maybe that, you know, that because after Puckett, and I think Davis, I think then they get Herbeck, who's a lefty. So you bring in Lee Brent for that, that's fine. I'm getting confused now. But anyways, but the point is that Kirby Puckett had batted something like 450 against lefties that season. And so he comes to bat leadoff in a game where he's already had one of the greatest defensive plays in World Series history, and he's also been most of the offense for the team. It's the 11th inning, and let's watch.
Into deep left center from Mitchell. And we'll see you tomorrow night.
Jack Buck.
Are you watching this game?
The reason, part of the great reason this World Series is so great is four of the games went to extra innings. All of them ended on a walk-off because, remember, the home team was winning every game.
Yeah.
And, I was 8 years old, so my bedtime was earlier. So for each game, I'd renegotiate with my parents. All right, I get to stay up to watch the rest of this game. Then I have to go to bed early the next three nights. But then the next game, we go to extra innings. All right, the next four nights, the next five nights, the next six nights. So by this point, I owed my parents like 2 weeks of early bedtimes.
Yeah. Yeah, but they never made you go to sleep during a game.
No, my parents let me watch. My dad. I don't think my mom was involved.
I'm trying to think if my parents ever made me go to sleep during like a big sporting event. I do remember one time, I don't know what I did. Maybe it was get a bad test grade. I remember one time I had no TV for like a week or something in like eighth grade-ish. That's the only time I ever remember like not being allowed to watch TV in general. All right. The Braves relievers were Jim Clancy, Kent Merker, Alejandro Pena.
So Pena was great that year, actually. I think Pena actually got suspended at some point.
But Stanton and Wohlers were Wohlers wasn't Wohlers yet, but Stanton was.
I could speak intelligently about this because I did listen to a podcast in the last month specifically discussing this in detail, but I don't remember anymore. Time. Mm-hmm. Do you remember pre-quarantine even?
Yeah, not much different for me.
No, I guess that's true.
I'm especially now, like the kids are allowed out again. Stanton and Pena had already come in. That's why they didn't.
They had a lefty who hadn't pitched yet. I mean, a righty, excuse me.
Oh, yeah. Everyone else was righty. Wohlers is a righty.
Yeah. They had somebody.
I think, is a righty.
Lee Brent's literally, he's a soft tossing. He's the worst possible pitcher to throw up there.
Yeah. I'm surprised Avery only went 83 pitches, six innings in that game. Avery was my favorite of the Braves pitchers. I was rooting incredibly hard for
the
Braves.
Yeah, he was
for
me also, actually, funnily enough. First of all, because, I don't know why anymore, but I just remember he was my favorite.
Yeah, but I was rooting so hard for the Braves in this series. I don't know why, as a Mets fan, I shouldn't have been. Do you remember who pitched Game 6 for the Twins?
Game 6? Yeah, I think it was Erickson.
Yeah, Scott Erickson.
Scott Erickson, yeah. So then, of course, the Twins win. We'll see you tomorrow night, as Jack Buck famously says the next night. 1-0. Jack Morris pitches a 10-inning complete game shutout, and they win 1-0 in the bottom of the 10th. A game that's legendary for... then that's the game John Smoltz pitches. John Smoltz, who grew up in Detroit, and his favorite player was Jack Morris, you know, in the 80s, the Tigers pitcher throughout the 80s, of course. They match up in Game 7. Smoltz pitches well, but he gets taken out, I think, in the 7th. And Lonnie Smith, by the way, who I mentioned previously, Lonnie Smith with just an incredible brain fart. He is on first base on a double deep to left center in the 7th inning or so. Should have easily scored, but Knobloch and Gagne at second and short do this fake little, like, they pretend to be fielding the ball as if it's grounded to them, and Smith freezes. And Smith's freezing doesn't make any sense, because even if they have the ball, why would you stop running? It doesn't make
any sense. But,
he stops running because he loses track of the ball. He thinks they have the ball. By the time he figures it out, he can only get to third, where he gets stranded and never scores. And, of course, no one scores. It goes to the 10th inning. So,
I can't believe we had a, like, World Series games where, like, Scott Laius and Junior Ortiz and Greg Gagne and
Well, do you remember who the hero for the Braves was?
Belliard and Lemke were
Mark
Francisco Cabrera.
Mark Lemke batted 400 something in that World Series.
Yeah,
Lemke
was one of the great second basemen in history defensively, but couldn't hit.
Are you being sarcastic? Lemke was a nothing.
No. Defensively, he's like an amazing second baseman.
Lemke's not on my chart of the top 150 second basemen of all time.
I think Bill James.
I don't think he had a long career. I would guess Lemke started 120 games fewer than 7 times.
Yeah, I remember from Baseball Abstract.
Yeah,
that
he has 6
Mark
WAR
Lemke.
Career 6 WAR.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wait, what did I say? 120 games fewer than 7 times. Let's see.
Yeah, but he has a negative hitting WAR. It's all in fielding.
Let's see. He had 4 seasons. He had 4 seasons with 120 games.
There's so many slap hitters in that. People forget about Ron Gant. Sid Bream, I think, has been lost to history. What do you think Sid Bream's doing nowadays?
Well, Sid Bream, of course, famously scores against the Pirates the next year.
Well, for the Francisco Cabrera.
On the Francisco Cordero play. Yeah.
When Barry that, oh, so I fell throw. Asleep. Where did I? I don't remember. I think I don't know if I fell asleep before the Francisco Cabrera play.
Yeah, the defensive numbers don't love Mark Lemke. I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah, Bill James liked him. I don't know. But again, that book was written 17 years ago or 20 years ago.
Yeah, he finished in the top 10 in the NL in defensive WAR 3 times. So that's fine. He was an okay second baseman.
This is a podcast where we talk about Mark Lemke's defense.
Yeah. All right. So that's number 1A or 1, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Which means everybody knows what 1B is. So we've had a lot of Joe Buck, and Joe Buck has another chance to mirror his father here, Jack Buck, because it's another game 6 of the World Series that is also an extra innings.
If you were repeating your dad's most famous line, what would it be? Alex, you're my third favorite son.
Yeah, something like that. All right, so I hated this one at the time because I thought, like, how dare you, like, you know, try and, you know, crib off, like, one of the greatest calls of all time.
Sure.
But I think it's a father, it's a son honoring his father.
Yeah,
so,
and
by the way,
yeah,
Joe
right
Buck, if you know anything about him, he absolutely worships his father.
Absolutely. His dad must have had him very late, right? Because Buck is not an old man, Joe Buck.
I would guess Joe Buck is 51 right now, if I had to guess.
Oh, yeah? So, his dad would have to be at least in his 40s, no? Unless Jack Buck died young.
Yeah, I think he's so his podcast is called Daddy Issues, and they talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
His dad basically took him everywhere, you know, like took him to the games and took him into the clubhouses. And yeah, so his dad was the Cardinals announcer forever until he became a national announcer.
He died in 2002, so he died relatively young before he was 80. He was born in 24.
So he'd be 96 right now. All right, so why don't we get to the number 1 clip?
So yeah, he was 45
Rangers
years old
Cardinals
when
World
he had
Series.
Joe Buck.
Same situation. Game 6. Once again, the home team is losing 3-2, so they need to win tonight and then play again tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's an extra innings, and David Freese comes up to bat.
Oh, yeah, but
not
there's
exactly
going to be a little,
a legend,
be a little foreshadowing first on this cut clip.
Yeah, and this is, by the way, this is 20 years exactly since the Kirby Puckett call.
How many World Series Game 6s have ended with a home run? This, by the way, is the 63rd Game 6 in World Series history out of a total of 107 World Series.
I remember one, working it with your dad in 91. Kirby Puckett, Jack's famous call. We'll see you tomorrow night.
There's one inside, 2-0.
Nothing else. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Okay, here we are. 11th inning again.
Hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
All right, Keith. So this was fun.
Yeah, that was a fun exercise.
The Braves winning a World Series, the Cardinals winning a World Series game. I don't care, but you know, whatever. It's Joe Buck honoring his father, so that's fine.
Sure, it's one of the Ten Commandments.
Yep, that's true. All right, so next week we're gonna get into the Mount Rushmores for every single city, the four most important sportsmen from every city, in Alex Chester's opinion.
How many cities do you have? Is it just the four sports cities?
Yeah, it's any city. No, no, it's any city with any team in any of the big four sports.
Can we get a London Big Four also? Can somebody give Alex the London Big Four?
Yeah, if a listener wants to send me in.
Somebody wants to
send
me in.
Submit me. Who are the biggest four athletes from London?
Melbourne Big Four.
Melbourne, yeah.
I think we're going to have Shannon Gus next week. I don't know if she lives in Melbourne or Sydney, but the Sydney Big Four. Well, so are you excited for our just a couple of weeks? Are you excited for the return of beloved footy?
Oh, of course.
We're gonna be really into footy. I'm excited to be able to. I'm so excited to be able to delete this tab which I've had up for months. the 32 Fan Sport. I'm gonna delete it right now because I have so many tabs on Chrome that it goes all the way down. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, first of all, that's crazy. I have, like, I close all my tabs every night. I go through what I need, and I only leave open.
No. I'm sorry. I don't mean tabs. I mean bookmarks. I don't leave any tabs open. I mean bookmarks.
People who say they have 50 tabs open, I don't understand. Like, your computer's slow, and you can't even find the tab you want.
Chrome doesn't work. Yeah, Chrome doesn't work with, like, more than 5 tabs usually.
And I know, because sometimes I'll open 50 at a time, but yeah, then I close them as quickly as I can.
No, I never really have more than 5 or 6 open at a time. But I meant bookmarks. I have so many bookmarks, and some are permanent. I get excited, like, ooh, sweet, fantasy football ended. I get to, like, delete that bookmark. Anyway,
Had a sad moment. My phone said to me today, do you want to create some space and delete some apps that you haven't used in at least 17 weeks?
Yeah, and one was fantasy football.
All those apps, they were all the NFL, all my fantasy apps and all my NFL apps. So I said, no, I'm keeping these apps. I'm hopeful, but, you know, who knows? We'll have some kind of football in September.
Yeah, I'm excited for football. I'm not super pessimistic about things right now. I'd say I'm pretty optimistic. I don't know about you. I just don't think baseball is going to be able to make it happen logistically, but I think past that, basketball should be fine. Also, it's one of the examples where the media is kind of dumb. The league said bye late July. I don't think that means that they're starting late July. I do think they'll probably start, like, closer to July 10th to 20th, not like the very end of July. If you read it, it's just like we just sort of need to start by the end of July. So I do think if there's no hiccups, there's a good chance we're going to get. And the NBA is going to start with the playoffs, right?
Well, no. They've talked about adding, like, 5 regular season games.
I mean, the teams like the Warriors and the Spurs have, like, openly canceled their seasons already. Like, Kerr said we're in off-season mode, I think. And
yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. Alex Chester already did all his end-of-season chart updates.
A big problem. It would be a big problem.
So for them to have to reopen the season and an extra 5 games could affect on the margins a guy moving from the third team to the second team, or, you know, it would cause complete havoc for me. So I really hope they don't. The regular season should be in the books. Let's go right to the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. They don't have that much time. You gotta get going.
In neither conference do we have a team 1 or 2 games out of the playoffs. Even
it doesn't make any sense. No one will really like. Who's going to complain the most? Who's in ninth?
It's because they don't want game one to be a playoff game where everybody shoots, you know, 30%.
I sort of get that. You could probably do 2 exhibition games, I think, and you know. I just don't. Once you bring people back for the regular season, how many games is it? You're going to have 2 regular season games?
Yeah, what's the point? They can practice. Practice for 2 weeks. What's the point?
Yeah, practice, have scrimmages against other teams or intra-squad. Like, yes, the first round will be bad, but what are you going to do? Listen, the quality of play is not going to be super high. I think we all have to, like, get used to that.
Yeah, you know what? None of us will care because anything is better than nothing.
Yeah, we won't even remember. We literally won't remember. I'm excited for basketball. And if you don't start with the playoffs, you can get out of football's way, you know, a little bit. And then start the season reasonably on December 25th, I think.
Yeah.
Like, also once you go closer to October, you can't just restart December 25th. It's not soccer. Then you're talking about, like, Martin Luther King weekend at the earliest.
Yeah, I think the 2020-2021 season is going to be less than 82 games, which is fine.
You think the next season... Yeah.
I think the next regular season is going to be less than 82 games, which is fine.
I don't think it has to be. I think if there's no more stoppages, I disagree. If there are 0 more stoppages, I do think it'll be 82 games. I just think they will have to.
Dr. Jen thinks
ones.
Things are going to be much worse in the fall.
Oh
in
boy!
Terms of the number of, in terms of the number of deaths. Now the
I just
the
said like
won't
I just said
because we're more.
I just
more
said I'm optimistic, now. And now we have a freaking doctor saying it's going to be much worse in the fall.
Well, no, she thinks more people are going to die.
Why? Because of.
But she doesn't think it's going to be. It's not going to be the chaos of now because, you know, we're more prepared for it now.
But does that mean there's not going to be, like, they're going to cancel, like, sports are going to stop again, she thinks?
I don't think she knows or cares about sports.
Sounds,
I haven't even asked her that.
Sounds not cool. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Keith, let's go. We'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, feeling good, like I should. When in Durka, walk around the neighborhood. Feeling blessed,
can be a better day despite the challenge. All you gotta do is leave it better than you found it. It's gonna get difficult to stand, but hold your balance. I just say whatever, cause there is no way you're round it. Everyone falls down sometimes, but you just gotta know it'll all be fine. It's okay. It's okay, it's okay. Feeling good, like I should. Winning dog to walk around the neighborhood. Feeling blessed, never stressed. Got that sunshine on my Sunday best. Some days you wake up and nothing works, you feel surrounded. Gotta give your feet some gravity to get you grounded. Keep good things inside your ears just like the waves and sound it. And just say whatever, cause there is no way you're grounded. Everyone falls down sometimes, but you just gotta know it'll all be fine. It's okay. It's okay, it's okay. Feeling good, like I should. Winning dog to walk around the neighborhood. Feeling blessed, never stressed. Got that sunshine on my Sunday best.